When we talk about things that are most important, we actually tend to talk quieter, not louder. That's where, if as a speaker, you can let yourself feel.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Andrew Churchill. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Andrew. One, he's fascinated by how communication works, and I'm guessing sometimes how it doesn't work as planned. Two, he's worked at the intersection between education and the rest of the world for his entire professional life. And three, Andrew is a tinkerer. He loves to tinker with things, fix them, and build things. And perhaps we need to know more about that, which is his latest tinkering project. Andrew, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you, George. A pleasure to be here again with you.
Delight to be talking to you. And you've got to tell us here, what are you tinkering on these days?
Well, one is, as we chatted about last time, my backyard ice rink always needs a bit of a tinkering. That's always a bit of a process. Actually, now what happens is as it snows, it's really fun because about three quarters of my backyard's full of ice. And when it snows, of course, you got to take the snow off, which means you can build stuff. So with my eight-year-old, we build snow forts all winter, and they get pretty big. We have a six-foot fence. We're in the middle of a city, so a six-foot fence around the yard, but the forts actually get bigger than the six-foot fence. So by the end of the winter, we can actually be climbing around. We build a little sledding hill in the back, and we can be looking down into the yards that in the summertime we never get to see.
Sounds like fun. Sounds like fun.
And fun.
Especially for eight-year-olds, yes. And
the eight-year-old in me loves it.
And that's what we need to do, tap into our eight-year-old to have fun. And we probably need to do that more, especially when winter's here, we might as well enjoy the snow. Andrew, you are a specialist in communication skills. You work especially with technical people on your communication, but also with business leaders as well. And one of the areas that I believe you give them assistance and help with is in how they sound. And,
yes.
And probably something that a lot of people probably aren't even aware of, or aren't cognizant, and think, well, my voice is my voice. What do you mean? I can't change it. I'm just the way I am. What do you do? First of all, what do you say for people who say, well, I can't change my voice. It sounds funny. I can't do anything about it.
For most people, I don't try and change your voice. I try and just allow you to actually use your voice. Because really what happens for most people is they fall into a professional voice. And the professional voice is the range of the professional voice is very, very narrow. And what happens if you present in that range is you're essentially become monotone. I've coined a funny name for it, I think. I call it monopavotone. Because it's actually about pace, volume, and tone. So I add pace and volume and get monopavotone as a word. And we try and get out of that. I'll give you one quick trick that I do with people. And you made me think of it because of my eight-year-old. Think about even younger than eight. So if you have any 3 or 4 year olds kicking around in your life, go to the library of children's stories that they would enjoy hearing and read them. read them one of those stories. And then with your phone, where'd my phone go? I've lost my phone. With your phone, record yourself. And what you'll hear is you actually have an enormously rich, dynamic storytelling voice. And what happens when most people do academic presentations is they eliminate 90% of their voice. And what we need to do is give you permission to use the whole thing. And one way to recognize that is actually I'm not really just trying to be funny when I say children's stories. I actually do this exercise with academics in classrooms at McGill University, right? So I actually bring children's books into McGill University classrooms and have students close their eyes and listen to someone read a children's story right after having listened to the person read an academic abstract of a journal article. And I tend to not have to actually say much more. I just do that and simply say, okay, who would you rather listen to? And they get the point pretty quickly.
That's an excellent exercise for anyone to do, because you're right. When we go into professional mode, we seem to restrict ourselves, and we want to look and sound serious because this is serious and this is work, and I can't be silly here.
We want to sound professional. I can flip this. I can do a quick exercise with you here to just map out exactly what we're talking about. So if we think about our professional voice, it's in here. If we think about, I just landed my best contract ever, it's up there. And if we think about one of my best friends was just diagnosed with cancer.
And for listeners who are only listening, Andrew's writing on the whiteboard, and he's drawn two horizontal lines to create three sections of the board. In the middle is our professional voice, which is restricted. At the top, he's put the excited, the good news voice, and at the bottom is the bad news, and those zones are outside of our professional voice zone.
Exactly, George. And that's actually the key. Because what we need to understand is, so in order to sound professional, most of our talk is going to be in here. But in order to connect with people as human beings, we need to be here and here. And almost always, we're going to start in one of those two spaces. We're almost never going to start in our professional voice. Need to remember, so lots of times when we talk, we have been given advice to be enthusiastic as a presenter, right? Be enthusiastic and have great energy. And I have people who have come out and said, okay, so we're going to talk about something really important today. Look to your right, look to your left. One of you is going to get diagnosed with cancer in the next 5 years. And with a smile on their face, and people are like, oh my God, there's a disconnect, right? So we're here to talk about intended message. What is the attitude? How do you feel about what you're saying? That's always what I ask people. Go through, map your talk. And map it in just this kind of three zone. Is this bad news? Is this great news? Or is this just professional detail? And remember that all great storytelling moves between those three zones. You never stay in one of those zones very long. So I used to have the problem of always being in the upper zone. I used to be like, oh, I need to be excited about this. I need to always be. And what would happen? I'd do an hour-long presentation with people. And by the end, people are just like, oh my God, it's too much. And I couldn't highlight anything because everything was a highlight. Everything sounded like a highlight. So I would go to highlight something and I couldn't do it. And I've actually had to relearn myself to spend more time in that middle zone so that there's opportunity to go somewhere. Because you can't be excited all the time. Everything can't be great. Because if everything's great, nothing's highlighted.
Andrew, that reminds me of a good point. You know, you can't stay in one zone all the time. You have to move between the zones. And perhaps you've been in a presentation where the presenter is one of those over-the-top, excited types, and they start their presentation with this silly question, how is everybody today? I can't hear you. I can't hear you. And they start in such a high, too much over-the-top that I shut down right then. I don't want to hear them anymore because they can't go any, and that they lose me, and I'm guessing a lot of people, because whatever their key message is, they can't emphasize it because they already used up that space.
So the key is, and this is a feedback piece, we do this with audience. I do this in my head because I can imagine an audience because I do this for a living. But for most people, you need to do this with trial audiences, which I do as well. I love actually, so I love going to, when I've coached people, I like to sit just backstage and actually watch the audience, not the presenter, because I want to see how the audience is reacting. So what you always want to think about doing as a presenter is getting the audience to lean in. And if I'm too loud, so if I come too loud and too hard at you, you're actually going to lean backwards. I'm actually pushing you away. And what I want to do is I want to pull you in. People don't realize it. So sometimes your most important message should be done quietly because people will lean in and listen because people think it's a secret. They think it's important. When we talk about things that are most important, we actually tend to talk quieter, not louder. That's where if as a speaker, you can let yourself feel, this is a problem with memorization. People memorize and then they stop feeling because they're just reading the script. And then they're in that professional voice because they want to sound professional and they're reading a script in their head. Even if it's memorized, your brain is still reading it. It's reading your memory versus delivering it and allowing yourself to feel. And that's the danger of memorization is we no longer feel. It's why a podcast, a conversation sounds like a conversation, but a presentation often sounds like someone talking at us instead of with us. And what we want when we're presenting is for people to have the feeling of having talked with us. If you look at the great TED Talks, look at the TED Talks that go viral. You don't feel like somebody's talked at you. You feel like they've let you in and had a conversation with you. Some of this we talked about last time where we're igniting curiosity, right? Like I'm making you curious about the next thing. You're asking, oh, I wonder how that works. And I'm answering. That's the back and forth from a content standpoint. The back and forth from a voice standpoint. Good news. It's exciting. This is great. Ugh, bad news. And look what happened to me. Good news. This is exciting. This is like I'm like there's a little tension in the shoulders because of bad news. Ooh. And done well. You actually, I was on a podcast a couple of weeks with someone ago. She said, "Oh my God, Andrew, I felt that in my bones. That oh." It's one of the reasons one of the things I always suggest to people is they stand. I actually asked George, I thought George was standing. If you think George standing, he tricked me too. He's sitting, but he's sitting as if he was standing. So if we saw his posture from the side, we'd see him sitting very upright and room for his diaphragm, right? And room for the entire vocal range. But he used to be in radio and he's been trained how to do it. Most of us regular people in the world, the only way we can do this is by standing. So I always tell everybody, you know, the number one thing you can do to be more dynamic vocally and to be more dynamic on screen is to stand up. I actually used to do this just with a chair that came off the street and a couple of books on top of the chair and the laptop sitting on the books on top of the chair. So the camera can get all the way up to eye height, right? So you just got to stack things to get to eye height, but literally just like your dining room chair on top of your desk with your laptop on a couple of books on the dining room chair will get you to a pretty functional place. From a technical standpoint, I'd much rather see you use a real microphone than your laptop microphone. So vocals and recording and on, like, if you were going to make one investment, the investment would actually be better spent in the microphone than the video camera. Your voice is more important online than your face. So if I was only going to make one investment, if I only had $100 or $150 to spend, I'd spend it on the mic, not the camera. All right. That was a lot to cover. I apologize, George. You got me going.
Andrew, and that's curious. And I tend to agree with you on the importance of the voice. Why do you believe that the power of the voice is so critical that it's more important even than how we look? Or the quality of the camera, for example.
Lots of people don't even watch the person online who's presenting. They just listen to them. So the audience is really making this choice. I mean, I don't know what your numbers would show out. Like, do your numbers show more people watch or more people listen? Because you publish both tracks.
Definitely, there's far more listeners than viewers.
And if you then figure more than half of the people viewing are not viewing after the first 30 seconds. So when we watch somebody, a video, so like a TED Talk, oftentimes we only watch the first 30 seconds. And then we get up and move around the room. And like, sometimes we'll sit and watch the whole thing, but more often than not, the videos and when we do presentations, if we're sharing screens, we're looking at the screen. That's a whole nother conversation. But one of the things you have to do if you're sharing PowerPoint online is to make the PowerPoint much more dynamic and much more visually stimulating, because they're actually looking at the PowerPoint, not you. Different in person. Different in person is a whole different game. In person, people are looking at you, not the PowerPoint. You don't want the PowerPoint to compete with you. But online, actually lean into the PowerPoint being more dynamic. But that's a bit of a different conversation. Really, the other thing with voice, there's a bit of a misunderstanding around old research, right? So there's that old research that says like 65% of what we get in the message is through physical body language. And if you actually go and unpack that research, it's not really what it said. It's just what everybody says it said. And it's really not what it said. And really, we get emotions through voice. And there's lots of research that shows this. If you do telephone cover, like just recorded messages of people, you can tell how they feel. Are they smiling? Like if you literally smile while you're talking on the phone, the person on the other end will rate you as more interesting just because you're smiling while you're talking on the phone. And there's no body language there, but there is, because we read our own body language and it comes through our voice. And we hear emotion. We can feel you through your voice, or none of the podcast. As soon as we had the ability to video, the podcast space would have been gone. It wouldn't exist if we couldn't connect with people through voice. And we know that's not true. We know the podcast space is vibrant. As you said, most people are listening to the podcast, not the video.
And Andrew, there's an interesting point I thought you raised there, and that's that even though the audience might not be looking, observing our body language, we are aware of our body language, and how we receive the messages from our body shows up in our voice.
Yeah, so I spend a lot of time encouraging people to be more active on stage, even if they're on camera. Because so if you freeze, it becomes very difficult for your voice to go anywhere. It becomes difficult for your attitude to adjust, right? Like try being happy without smiling. And try being unhappy when you do smile. So they're connected, and we're human beings. We can't separate. When I first started teaching presentation coaching, I was handed a curriculum that broke everything up into pieces. Okay, we're going to talk about voice. Okay, we're going to talk about body language. Okay, we're going to talk about script. Okay, we're going to talk about, and I was told, okay, this is the way people learn. People learn by doing this and getting better at it, and then doing this and by getting better at it. And for a while I did it that way. And frankly, I wasn't very successful. Because it's all connected.
Mm.
It just doesn't separate. It's one of the reasons. So people talk about the power of storytelling. Enormous, like there's a huge conversation going on right now with the importance of storytelling in presentation and in communication. And you can't separate that from the fact that if you tell stories, your delivery, you're going to 10x your delivery. And I would actually argue you can be effective without telling stories, as long as you do all the things that stories do naturally. The problem is, it's very hard for people to, if people tell stories, they do it without having to learn how to do it. If you don't tell stories and you try and sound like you're telling a story without telling a story, that actually takes a lot of work to learn how to do. And you can actually become quite effective and quite engaging without necessarily telling stories. Although I still recommend telling stories, everything's commingled.
So Andrew, I'm hearing that we keep hearing that the importance of telling stories, but another benefit of telling a story is that the story will tend to allow us to bring out our better voice.
Absolutely. Because the story doesn't just exist here. The story is here and here. So for those not on video, I'm in those three tracks again. The story being here is the professional middle voice track. that's our professional voice, that we want to sound important and we want to sound like, oh, I have alphabet soup after my name and I've done a lot of academic career and I know what I'm talking about, and that voice, right, which pretty soon becomes very boring and is not the voice we use with our friends. I know this because I used to actually teach in that voice. And when I stopped teaching in that voice, my student ratings went way up, way up. And I know I have that voice because sometimes I talk to my wife, who I love, and we get into a conversation about something that I'm trying to explain something to her. And I'll slip into, just like George, you were talking earlier. George told this story earlier about having, can I tell this story, George?
Go ahead, Andrew.
So George told a story about calling his dad and leaving a voicemail. And while he was listening to his dad's message, his brain flipped into professional George Turok of Your Intended Message. And that was the voicemail he left for his dad. And then he got halfway through it and he was like, oh my God, Dad, I'm sorry. But I do that sometimes with my spouse, and she's, don't you use that voice on me. Oh, yeah. Or I do it at a dinner table, and she's like, don't you use that voice on my dad. She'll kick me under the table. And it's just, we slip into that. It's easy for us to slip into that space because it's the way we often have business conversation. But if your presentation sounds like your business conversation voice, nobody's going to want to listen to you. Sorry. It's just not. And that doesn't mean that your business conversation voice isn't effective in having a business conversation with someone. It just means it doesn't translate to presenting, because now you're talking at someone instead of having a conversation with them.
Andrew, let's assume that our voice is, and I'm going to go back to, and some people might remember, before we had digital, we had dials to adjust, a dial to adjust volume. But when it comes to voice, we have more than one dial. One, of course, is volume. Another one might be pace. Are there other dials that we should play with, that we should be aware of and practice adjusting them?
The three big ones I think of are pace, volume, because we can actually go down, right? And we can go into a whisper, which is actually a shift in tone as well. And then tone. And tone's actually quite complicated, and I'm not a voice specialist, but there's a lot to tone. But I think pace, volume, tone are the three big ones. The challenge I always have with people is the use of practice and the idea that we are purposefully manipulating pace, volume, tone, which we can do if you're a professional actor. That's one of the things you do, is you learn to purposefully manipulate. Most of the people I work with are not interested in professional voice training. They're interested in presentation coaching. They don't have time for professional voice training. They're busy professionals or they're busy academics. So what I do is I lean into this concept of attitude, because your voice will naturally move if you allow your attitude to shift. So as you move into, as you get more excited, you're going to get faster and lighter and quicker and higher in that space. Because you're excited about something. You can't wait to share. Our voice comes up higher into our chest. And I guarantee you, if your friend just got diagnosed with a potentially life-threatening disease, your voice is going right down into your belly. And it's going to be deeper and it's going to be slower. And it's going to feel heavy because you feel heavy. You collapsed in like, ugh. And if you let yourself, you know, it's amazing how many people they work through a talk and they've done a nice job sequencing their talk. So there's good news and bad news, right? So here we have this problem we're dealing with that we need to make it so spinal surgeons have simulators so spinal surgeons can practice and not have the practice be on their first patient. That's a problem. And here we have some exciting new news, right? We have new computers. We have the ability to make haptic feedback much more sensitive. For those of you who didn't see the earlier podcast that I did with George, this is in reference to that. But you could hear the difference in my voice between that problem space and that excitement space of having solved the problem. And that's the movement we need. And then the details can kind of fit in the middle. But our talks, when we map out a talk, it's going to start high or low, right? And then it's going to move. And it's going to jump around. As we move through our talk, our voice is going to go to those other places. And we just need to... If we remember how we've, so instead of just reporting out what happened, if we remember how we feel when that happened, if we relive it and we share that experience with our audience of reliving that moment, we're essentially now telling a story about our work, or the way our ideas progressed, or the ways we figured something out. That's the story part. It's not a story like I went fly fishing. It's the story of my work. And if I let myself remember how I felt as I was doing it. So, you know, I work with academics and researchers, right? Like research is friggin' frustrating. It's like, I couldn't figure out, like, it didn't work. If you say it didn't work, we better hear you being mad about it or frustrated about it or annoyed or surprised. It didn't work. Couldn't figure, I was like, I thought it was going to work. It didn't. We need to, so two very different feelings. One, surprise, incredulous. What do you mean it didn't work? Versus one, pissed off and angry, like it didn't work and it needs to. I don't care which one. I mean, yeah, if you're doing a TED talk, we're going to decide which one plays better with the audience because we're trying to get to 10 million views and go. But if you're just doing a regular talk, like it doesn't matter, but pick one. And I always say, don't pick. Let it pick you. Just be honest. Like there's a big conversation about authenticity, right? That's what authenticity is about. Authenticity is not about, so if I'm telling you about my research and I stay in this professional voice space, I know darn well that is not your experience doing research because you're a human being doing research. And you have moments that are exciting and you have moments that are incredibly frustrating and you have moments where you're incredibly hopeful and you have moments where you're angry. And if I don't hear that, then you're not being authentic.
So allow your emotion to show up in your voice.
And the rest of you. Just allow yourself to be a human being.
Which when we go to work, we spend a lot of time trying not to be human because we're trying to fit in and we're trying to be serious and we just want to do our job.
But I guarantee you, if we did a thought exercise where you went through the top 3, 5, 6, 8, 10 people you've listened to, every single one of them sounds like a human being. None of them sound like playback recording from a computer, right? Like none of them sound like a script that was that the computer turned into words. But often that's what we sound like as human beings. And again, because when we memorize, but we don't rehearse, so memory without rehearsal is a really bad idea. Anderson talks about this in his TED Talk book about us. I want to say he refers to it as the valley of death. That may not be correct. But essentially what happens is you memorize and it becomes terrible because all you've done is memorize it and you're just reading the script. And then you have to rehearse it. And this is what actors do, right? Actors memorize and then rehearse. And they rehearse so they get the delivery right. If you memorize but you don't rehearse, you're likely to get yourself in a lot of trouble. You're better off not memorizing and allowing it to be more natural and come through with more feeling. If you do memorize, you then have to really rehearse. And you can rehearse even though something isn't memorized. That doesn't mean you shouldn't rehearse. You can practice, right? And it's going to be a little different every time. You have kind of the critical moments. But it is that it's allowing yourself as a speaker, like trust the script, trust your memory of the script, and then allow yourself to be in the moment. And allow yourself to be in the, not necessarily this moment on stage. That's not the moment we necessarily want you in. We want you to be in the moment you're sharing with us. We want to see you back in that moment. And then you come back to the stage in the moment with us. You got to think about, okay, where am I in this moment? And what is it that people want to see and hear? And what does authenticity look like? And it's complicated, but really, if you just allow yourself to feel, allow yourself to get excited, allow yourself to get frustrated.
Let it show.
If you allow yourself to actually remember being frustrated and actually get frustrated again at that moment, we're going to hear it. It's going to show if you allow yourself to go there. So it's a little different than training. It reminds me a little bit of the whole, so my other background in the world is in education and educational development, and there's a whole unschooling moment, right? Like what do schools teach us? How do schools teach us to, they get rid of creativity and they become very pedantic. So there's a little bit of that. What do professional presenting, stand behind a podium and sound professional? Like we got to unlearn that and allow ourselves to be human again and allow ourselves to feel. It's like building snow forts with your 8-year-old, right? Like, what does that do for me? Well, it allows myself to, like, it gets rid of all the filters. And we want to bring some of that to the stage.
Good reminders, building snow forts with 8-year-olds. Andrew, for people who want to learn more, want to get a hold of you, learn more about the programs and the coaching that you provide, what's the best way to reach you?
The best way to reach me is on LinkedIn. I'm active on LinkedIn, Andrew H. Churchill. And I try and post 2, 3, 4 times a week. I mostly post about presentation. So I try and stay in my lane most of the time, although there are a few back there that show my ice rink in the backyard. So there's a little Anna Lane, not too much, but a little bit. I do some workshop work. I do some guests, I'm a guest speaker sometimes and for various events or organizations that want training, and I do a lot of one-on-one coaching.
Andrew, in wrapping up, if there's one, two, or three pieces of advice that you could give to a business presenter who has a presentation to deliver next week, and if there are one, two pieces of advice you could, one, two, or three, you could give them about how to get their voice in shape, how to get ready for the presentation, or how to at least start to improve, not be perfect, but just make better use of their voice.
Figure out how to get out of the middle lane. So it may be that you need to read a children's book and record it so you can hear yourself. It may be that, like, give the presentation to your 10-year-old or your 8-year-old so you have a different kind of smiling voice there, smiling face there. But remember that we want you to get out of that middle lane. And then the other, so that's one exercise of give yourself permission. And then the other one is, I like to have people map out their talk into all the different, each piece. And then, is this neutral? Is this good news? Or is this bad news? And then take all those pieces. So you've cut your talk up into like a whole bunch of yellow post-it notes now, and map them on this board we've done, where the just regular detail is the middle lane, but then anything that's good news is in the upper lane and everything that's bad news is in the lower lane. And remind yourself to go there. Map it out so in your head, you're no longer thinking about these. So as you memorize the script, you have it mapped on this scale. Then that'll remind you, be like, oh yeah, this is bad news. So when you're in your talk, you'll remember that, oh yeah, this is like down here. Because you need those reminders. We all get really nervous, so we get lost in the moment. So if we can give ourselves some reminders, that'll help us as we get into it.
Good advice to end on. My guest today is Andrew Churchill, reminding you to become more aware of the three main aspects of your voice. That's pace, volume, and tone.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.